All right, this is a special Friday night, 11:42 p.m. Pacific time, much later on the East Coast, where our friend Tim Bontemps came back from the game of the century month. I don't know what it was.
It was the game of the season, at least, at the very least.
Absolutely. I mean, I can only imagine. I mean, Boston probably has like more of a media presence than you might expect, given it's not. I mean, it's a large market, but I think people kind of care more about sports there than they do other places. I mean, what was the scene like?
Well, I just posted a long story for the Washington Post about tonight's game, and the big takeaway for me. I mean, we're obviously going to get into the game, which was crazy, but the big takeaway for me is that the Warriors have transcended sports. They are a bigger story than anything happening right now. And it's really stunning. I mean, you're around this team, so you know this, but like people going to watch Stephen Curry shoot jumpers before the game, like hundreds and hundreds of people, is bizarre.
They had a live, like CSN, right. New England had a live cam on him,
right.
On their website,
right.
Before the game.
Right, they have a live cam on him. ESPN had somebody come here to chart his shots in his warm-ups. I think Stats Info tweeted that out.
Yeah, a game that was not actually on ESPN,
right.
By the way.
Right, a game that wasn't on ESPN. They had SportsCenter here. They had Festus Ezeli going on SportsCenter like an hour after the game just to have some Warrior on TV because, you know, the other guys were already all doing other things. This game was on League Pass, obviously. Not everybody has League Pass, though probably everyone listening to this podcast does. But
it was a free preview this, so hopefully people were able to get it.
But a lot of people weren't because I had a lot of friends of mine who were out to dinner with their girlfriends or were home and didn't either want to try to get League Pass or didn't know how or were, you know, out somewhere else and they couldn't watch the game. Like, I had 10 people texting me for updates all night. Like, what's happening? Where's the game now? Are they going to win? Just people like, I can't believe you're there. I mean, it's December, what is it, December 11th? I guess now it's December 12th. I mean, Saturday the 12th, like it's just crazy. I mean, I really can't get over the fact that this team and this streak has become bigger than anything else in sports right now. It's just really amazing to witness.
You know, I think like this is in some ways is like more important than the NBA Finals to me. Like just because the NBA Finals happens every year. Like, this doesn't happen every year. Miami had their amazing streak before then. I mean, nobody had gotten above into the 20s since that 08 Rockets team that I don't think anyone ever thought was actually going to get there. And I think they ended up losing the first round that year. And before that, it hit, you know, the record was like 18 other than that 33 in a row Lakers. This has been viewed for so long as one of sports most unbreakable records. You know, I can't wait to see how it unfolds. I thought it was going to end tonight, though, and I thought that the Celtics actually outplayed the Warriors in this game. What do you think of
that? I totally agree. And I mean, we were at – I was at the two games that have probably been the closest to this streak being snapped. The last game in my old job covering the Brooklyn Nets, when they – really should have beaten the Warriors for several reasons. When the Nets, you know, had Brook Lopez made a 6-inch shot.
Yeah, or had Andre Iguodala not made an incredibly tough contested three-pointer to tie it 10 seconds before that.
Right, or if the Nets had done like one of six other things right, they would have won the game. And so, you know, they don't, you know, but they don't win that game. And then tonight, I totally agree. You know, I look at you sent me some notes that you were going through for the podcast. And I mean, Stephen Curry had 38, 11 and 8 and didn't play very well.
Yeah. 9 out of 27 from the field.
Right. Shot 9 for 27, had 8 turnovers, several of them very careless, just like stepping out of bounds or like losing the ball out of bounds, missing layups. You know, Klay Thompson isn't playing. Harrison Barnes isn't playing. LeAndre Barbosa Costa basically only played because they needed him to, but he wasn't that great. You know, but this team, you know, before the Warriors played the Nets, I had talked to Lionel Hollins about the 77-78 Blazers, who I think went 50-10 the year after they won the title before Bill Walton.
yeah, that shows you right there how big this whole thing is.
But they were 50-10 when Bill Walton broke his foot that year. And, like, basically just rampaging through the league, and we're almost assuredly going to win another championship. And he said something that has really stuck out to me ever since, which is that it didn't matter how much they were down in games. They always thought they were going to win. They could be down 15 with 5 minutes left. They could be down 10 with 2 minutes left. They could be down 5 with a minute left. And they just never stopped thinking that they were going to win the game. And you could see... You could see that's what the Warriors are like now. They come into every game, and until the game is over, there's no doubt in their minds that they're going to find a way to win. And if any of these teams give them just the slightest edge, whether it's, you know, like in that Nets game, Brook Lopez has missed a shot they should have made. You know, the Nets could have fouled on that three-pointer that Andre Iguodala took, and they didn't foul him. Tonight, the Celtics miss a bunch of free throws. You know, they let Steph get open on the elevator play. Isaiah Thomas at the end of regulation really takes a terrible isolation against a guy 8 inches taller than him. He gets a shot blocked. Like, they had their chances and didn't capitalize. And you have to capitalize on your chance against this team or you're not going to beat them.
You know, one of the things that occurred to me is people have been talking about, how is the pressure mounting of the streak? Well, an interesting thing about it is they now have been going through this for a long time, and they're kind of used to it. The other team, and, you know, it helps that they're better than all these teams except when they're playing without Klay Thompson, but the other team, they start to get tight at the end. They realize, you know, that this is like a huge game, whereas the Warriors are kind of used to this. In some ways, the fact that this has become so big, I think, actually can work to their advantage.
Totally agree.
Against these teams that are kind of... You know, ingenues in this situation.
I totally agree. You see it all these games. You know, every game these teams are playing is like a finals game. Like, I wrote in my story that tonight could have been a game. I was at game six? I'm trying to remember if it was game five or game six in the year the Celtics were playing the Heat. And they went up...
Yeah, that would have been game six. The one where LeBron, they could have closed it out and LeBron had the 45 points. Yeah, in 2012.
Yeah. So, like, I was at that game and it just, they just didn't, it was like that atmosphere tonight. Like, it was bonkers in there. People were going crazy. I mean, there were a few Warriors fans too, like there are at every game now. But, I mean, the fans there could kind of smell blood. They knew Klay Thompson wasn't playing. The Celtics played great.
Avery Bradley
was incredible. I mean, his shot deserted him really after the first quarter. But people are going to say, Steph just went 9 for 27. He must have just missed a lot of shots. No, Avery Bradley was awesome. And
it was interesting, you know, because I thought right from the jump that Steph looked a little uncomfortable and that he – was shooting just a little bit faster, which Bradley was certainly forcing him to do, but that he also wasn't quite trusting his teammates as much. And he seemed like he kind of knew, like, all right, I'm the only one on this team who can score now with Klay out. And he was rushing his shot. Now, he can still make a fair amount of those shots. I mean, he still shot 6 out of 13 on his threes, but he definitely was rushing just a little bit more than he normally would. I mean, he had a couple of shots blocked, which you never see from him, for example.
Yeah, no, and Luke Walton said after the game that they need to do a better job of not having everything go through Steph.
But when there's no Klay Thompson, there's nobody else. I mean, right. Draymond took 20 shots. I mean, you can't ask him to take
I think more what his point was that the offense wasn't running the way they would like it to. Because I was going to come back around to your point because I agree. I think Steph didn't necessarily trust the guys that were out there. Not that you necessarily blame him, because they're starting the game with Brandon Rush and Ian Clark playing on the wings, which, no offense to those guys, it's not Harrison Barnes and Klay Thompson.
Yeah, those are replacement-level guys, right. Basically. Those are guys who, I mean, Brandon Rush, if his contract weren't guaranteed for this year, probably wouldn't even be in the league.
Right. So, you know, that's the problem, though. If you're, you know, if you are down those guys, you know, it's the obvious thing is for Steph to go, all right, well, I gotta take on more responsibility. And then, you know, when you are going up against a guy like Avery Bradley, who's a premier defensive guard in the league and one of the few guys that can actually give Steph trouble, that is a recipe for you to go 9 for 27 and commit a bunch of turnovers and almost lose a game. But, you know, their mental fortitude is so strong that they're able to overcome it.
Yeah, I think that's right. And
Draymond, you know, Brent, and by the way, yeah. I'm not to cut you off, but we should just we have to talk about Draymond. He was.
Yeah,
we have to just get to that now. He was.
Okay. Well, yeah, no, absolutely, you're right. You were there. I thought his defensive performance, especially in the first half, was unbelievable. I think he had, you know, a 5-by-5 with a 20-and-10, which has like only been done like 3 times or something.
Yeah,
it was an unbelievable effort.
Akeem and Derek Coleman are the only guys who've ever done that. 20-10, 5-5-5. It's just incredible. No, he was great. I mean, the play of the game for me, not that it like changed the outcome, but I don't remember exactly when in the game they had. I think it was in the third quarter, but Draymond threw the pass, but there was some kind of turnover, and it was essentially a 4-on-1 for the Celtics. And somebody swung the ball over to Avery Bradley for a layup, and Draymond somehow blocked the layup.
Oh, yeah, that was unbelievable.
But not only did that and got the rebound, then came back down. Somebody, I think maybe Livingston, shot the ball and missed it. Somebody took a shot and missed, and Draymond went up over 3 guys, got the ball, and scored on an offensive putback. Like, I know it wasn't like a play in overtime or something, but to me, it just really personified the way that guy can play and the way he played tonight. Cause he was just, I mean, anybody who doesn't think Draymond Green is a top 10 or at worst top 15 player in the league now, they just have to watch that game, because he was a singular force at both ends. And, you know, he played for a ton of minutes, important minutes, with 5 fouls and didn't foul and was running the offense. I know you mentioned in your notes, like, him driving to the rim constantly, you know, wreaking havoc at that end. You know, he just did everything. He really was unbelievable.
Yeah, and I think maybe the people who, like me included, perhaps, were giving them less of a chance without Klay, and they definitely, they felt the loss of Klay. I mean, on those pick and rolls on the backside, like Danny and I did, we previewed the game a little bit last night, and it was exactly what we talked about, where if it was Rush, it was Clark, Iguodala, Livingston, they always put Klay on the backside of the pick and rolls, and without him there, they're able to crash that guy out, down into the paint, and guys like Clark and Rush were not able to make him pay, although those guys did have a good stretch in the third. But Draymond was able to do enough offensively to keep them afloat, you know, especially driving past Amir Johnson at times, who didn't have that great of a game. So, yeah, it was probably not giving him enough credit offensively. And then, you know, their defense is pretty much always going to be good, and was very good after that initial flurry by Bradley.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I mean, it really was a tour de force performance from him. And, you know, he's a guy, like, I'm just amazed every time I see him play, because it's just hard to find many guys. You know, I mean, maybe it's kind of a weird comparison, but I mean, the only guy I can really think of like him is Gilbert Arenas, who I think ironically was also picked by the Warriors in the second round. But like, a guy to come into the league in the second round and just become, I mean, I guess maybe Manu even back in the day too, but that was a little different. But like,
yeah, that is different, because, I mean, that was just sort of a investment,
right.
And then he was EuroLeague MVP like 3 years in a row by the time he actually got to the
league. Right, but like,
yeah.
But for Draymond to be a second round pick and come in the league and, I mean, 4 years later, just to be doing this is, I mean, it's just unbelievable. It's as unbelievable as everything going on at the Warriors. I mean, it's really just, they're really just an unbelievable spectacle. It's something else. It's really something.
You know, one thing that actually occurred to me too, and I forget who said this, was that when they tanked in that 2012 draft, you know, they got Barnes and everyone talks about that, but they also were then in position to draft Green, you know, for having a better second round pick as well. They probably don't get him if they don't tank that year.
Yes, totally. Totally right. I mean, and you go back and look, I mean, Harrison Barnes, Draymond Green, and Festus Ezeli in one draft is as good as any draft day ever. I mean, it's pretty incredible the haul that they got from that draft and how much their arc has changed since that day.
Yeah, this is, and I guess, yeah, Ezeli, too, the way they got that pick was they basically took on $10 million in extra salary by taking Richard Jefferson over Steven Jackson, because Jefferson's, and they got Jackson from the Bucks, and Jackson's contract ran a year less than Jefferson's.
Right.
So they got that pick. You know, it ended up being the Spurs pick, number 30. It didn't really seem worth it at the time, and now, you know, his offensive rebounding has been enormous for this team.
Yeah, no, he was big in it tonight. I think he had 12 and 12. You know, he played pretty well behind Bogut. Bogut was good at times defensively, but you know, whenever he started to get winded or struggled, you know, Festus came in. I mean, his hands still aren't that great, but he's still a force on the boards, and he's gotten really good positionally on defense. And you know, he's another guy. I mean, Draymond got paid last summer, and I mean, you know, there's been a lot of talk about what contract Harrison Barnes is going to get, but, you know, Ezeli's going to get paid next summer too in some form, because, I mean, he's really developed into a seven-footer that can do a lot of stuff and is athletic and can run the floor and can keep up with this fast-paced Warriors team. So, you know, certainly at some point, whenever they do move on from Bogut, they've clearly got their guy lined up to replace him.
Well, let's give the Celtics a little bit of credit here, because I thought they did play a wonderful game. As we said, I mean, I think both of us agreed that they were really kind of the better team on this night, and they missed a lot of layups. I mean, Golden State, you could really would be hard-pressed, other than transition, they did not get that many good shots in this game. They just made a lot of tough shots. Steph, I mean, I don't think Steph had a single three that would be characterized as open for like a normal player, you know.
No.
And usually he'll get 3-4 of those. I mean, if you compare this to like the Indiana game, for example, and a lot of that was Clay being so good and the interplay between those two guys. But you know, the defense was fantastic. Bradley, we talked about. Evan Turner did almost as good of a job really on Steph as Bradley did. Jay Crowder was fantastic, like denying the ball, like preventing them from reversing it and running a lot of the actions they wanted to, switching out when appropriate onto Steph. You know, I thought that all those guys on the wing for them really had excellent performances.
You know who played well too? James Young. James Young.
Yeah, he actually had some okay minutes.
Yeah, James Young has had a few games lately. And I'd seen he'd gotten a chance to play a little bit. And so I asked some of the Celtic beat guys, like, yeah, like he's actually played and been pretty good. And you know, he comes in the first half. He was got, I think, 8 first half minutes. He played 20 in the game. Played some credible defense. Made some plays. You know, given.
I mean, I didn't see a single defensive screw up from him.
No,
really. I mean, there was one play where they doubled Olynyk, and he could have. He was in the opposite corner, and maybe could have made a cut or something. But that was the only real kind of mental issue that I saw with him. He did play well. That was encouraging.
Yeah, he did. And Kelly Olynyk was a monster. I mean, 28 points and off the bench, and
he killed those switches.
Yes,
I mean, pretty. Other than the one time when they double teamed him, he either was able to get a nice lob. I mean, he's someone who has probably been more effective than pretty much anyone that I've seen attacking those Golden State switches.
Yeah, that was kind of the Kelly Olynyk that you dreamed of, like that the Celtics dreamed about when they drafted him, right? Like that's kind of like when Danny Ainge took him, I think 12th overall in that draft.
13th, I think two spots ahead of Giannis, as I'm sure
I'm sure they are as they should be. But that, you know, he's a 7-footer that can shoot the ball to put it on the floor a little bit. And is the kind of guy that in today's league can really make teams pay if he's making shots. And yeah, I mean, he was the best player on the court at stretches tonight when, you know, when Draymond wasn't in the game or when, he was just burying shots left and right. I mean, they were doing well with some switches. Brad Stevens coached a hell of a game, and he did a nice job. He did a nice job getting Olynyk matched up in the post. I think Steph ended up guarding him, I think, twice in the post, and they took advantage of that for a couple buckets, including that one that put them up five with a couple minutes left in regulation. And when I was thinking, all right, maybe that's the dagger. They played a hell of a game. The Celtics were really good, and I thought Brad Stevens coached a terrific game. I thought his decision not to call timeout at the end of both regulation and the first overtime were great calls. Golden State wasn't really ready for them to do that. I think both times they kind of thought they were going to take a timeout. The one time, you know, in the end of regulation, I thought Isaiah Thomas just should have actually done something. But I like the thought. In the end of the first overtime, he got a great shot. I mean, he got to like 10, 11 feet and was pretty open and just missed it.
Yeah, I don't know. I would disagree there. I don't think that was that good of a shot. I mean, Bogut was kind of there, and actually Thomas really struggled in this game. That was and
he did.
Bogut, who had a horrible first half, actually really got into Thomas's head in the second half at the rim. I mean, Thomas usually a layup master, and he was only 2 of 5 right at the rim, and then 1 of 5 in the paint, non-restricted. So I think, and you could tell that he was just sort of hesitating, like. He threw up a couple really wild ones.
Yeah,
that's
just true.
Incredibly high, not comfortable. So yeah, that was the benefit of Bogut. Although Bogut kind of struggled on the defensive glass, but he did get into Thomas's head. And you know, if Thomas could have played a little bit better, you know, I mean, he was able to get into the lane, and even Olynyk, who played well overall, missed a fair amount of layups. Sullinger as well. They really just. They're 21 out of 35 at the rim, which is right about, you know, kind of league average, but you still hope you could do a little bit better. And then they're only a 5 out of 16 in the paint for the non-restricted.
And you can't be around league average to beat Golden State, even when Golden State's off. I mean, that was what I kept thinking this entire game. It's like Golden State's – Stephen Curry's not playing well. Draymond is incredible, but Stephen Curry's not playing well. And no Clay, no Harrison Barnes. You know, Ian Clark and Rush are playing, you know, they're struggling along. They're in the sixth game of a 2-week road trip, which I don't think people have any idea how tired these guys are at this point after.
Yeah. Maybe Ethan Strauss does.
Maybe. But nobody else. And, so I mean, to overcome all of that against a team that's playing really well, a well-coached team, playing really well at home with a bunch of young athletic guys, and you know, just the mental fortitude they had to find a way to win the game was just I just keep coming back to it in my head. It was just unbelievably impressive. It really was.
They also were up by 7 when the fourth quarter started, and then I think they gave up basically a 10-1 run.
Yeah, that lineup was bad.
Yeah, and now you can make the argument that, all right, you know, when Barnes is in there. The big problem with the lineup I'm talking about is when you go with Spates and another big as well, or even just any two big alignment, which they basically never do because Draymond is hybrid enough.
In case people didn't see the game, the lineup they had to start the fourth quarter was Sean Livingston, Leandro Barbosa, Andre Iguodala, I think James McAdoo, and then Precious Azili. And Luke Walton went to Maurice Spates with like a minute and a half for McAdoo just to try to get some scoring on the court. And, you know, even after that, I mean, it just wasn't like that lineup just got torched. I think the Celtics, I think it was 11-1 run in 3 minutes to start the quarter. So, you know, they went from up 7 to down 3 in a millisecond. And then, you know, you could tell he wanted to get Draymond and Steph 3 minutes. And just get to the 9-minute timeout and bring him back in, but that lineup was so bad that you know, he couldn't even get that far. And amusingly, David Lee was kind of the catalyst of that lineup, which was really the one of the ironic parts of the night.
And Lee was terrible in the first half.
Yes.
But then you could tell he was kind of like trying to go one-on-one against Azili and didn't have a ton of success. But then was able to kind of get some cuts in against that bad lineup. I thought Stevens deserved credit for not going back to Lee, despite the fact that he had that stretch that he realized that was just an artifact of the fact that he was going against that lineup.
Yes.
And just, went with the guys who'd been better all season. But now you could say, all right, Barnes is out. Who else are you supposed to play? You got to get some minutes. I actually would probably just go back to Rush and either play, whether you want to call him the four or Iguodala the four, at least get some modicum of space to me, because this team just isn't used to playing with two bigs. With Draymond, they don't do it in the starting lineup. Usually Barnes is the backup four. So they just don't have any idea what to do. And they just, whenever those lineups are out there, they're always just miserable.
Yes. And I'm guessing that Walton went that way because of how Boston is on the glass. I'm guessing that's why he did that. But I'm with you. I would have at least gone for some spacing and just hoped that Rush hit a couple shots or, they could get some driving lanes open or do something, because those two big lineups just wasn't going to work. I mean, there was no way that was going to work against these guys, especially with the way they were taking advantage of it. Celtics taking advantage of it at the other end. It just really, you could just tell right away, a minute into the quarter, you could kind of just start going, all right, how long can he wait before he brings back Draymond and Steph? Because this is going to be a disaster until he does.
What did you think of the officiating in this game?
It was questionable, I would say. I think Monty McCutcheon is the best ref in the league. I think he's terrific. I don't know if – I didn't really think he was necessarily the problem today, but there were a lot of strange plays, a lot of odd reviews, couple odd calls.
What killed me were there were so many calls – on plays that didn't affect the outcome. Like,
yes.
There was like a push in the back that was called for an and one on an offensive rebound that wasn't even really that egregious. Like,
that
I hate
Draymond,
that call,
right?
Anyway. You know?
That was on Draymond, yeah. Right? Yeah, I remember that play. I thought the same thing.
There was that one, and then there was another one on Amir Johnson where the Warriors had already gotten the defensive rebound and he was called for a loose ball going for the offensive rebound. I mean, that's just some of those ones. Just let it go. Like, it's better to maintain the flow of the game. I understand there has to be some sort of deterrent effect so a guy can't just, like, plow through someone. But if you do that and you don't really get the rebound and it's not that egregious, just let it go, especially at the end of the game when both teams are in the bonus and you got guys shooting free throws that are going to affect the outcome.
Yeah, totally agree. The one thing I did get a laugh about was there was that phantom foul call on Stephen Curry for his fourth foul that everybody freaked out about. But the funny thing about it, and maybe they didn't show this on TV, I'm not sure, but the funny thing about it was the second the whistle blew, I think Steph didn't realize how many fouls he had. And I didn't ask him this after the game because in the end it didn't matter. But the second the whistle blew, he shot his hand up immediately and he stole a foul from Draymond.
Which is like the first time in recorded history that's ever actually worked.
Right, which was great, and it gave him his fourth foul. Like, I think he knew that Draymond had three and forgot that he did.
Well, and frankly, it was better, Steph can always avoid fouls.
Yes,
and it was
he can
better.
Avoid fouls anyway. Yes.
Yeah, and Draymond, he would have fouled out had that been charged
to
him ultimately.
Yes, and frankly, the way that game was being played, and as well as Draymond was playing, if that foul had been called on him, I think they would have lost. Because Draymond would have been on the bench for a lot longer, and I just don't know what they would have done if Draymond had to sit on the bench for an even longer stretch of time. Because Steph, like we said before, Steph wasn't playing that well, and I think it would have just really changed the dynamic of things if he had to go sit on the bench for a while. So, the outrage on the internet over that play just amused me because frankly, Steph was the one who made it happen in the first place. So,
there are a couple of coaching things down the stretch that I did think were big. One was that the Warriors at both the end of regulation and the end of the first overtime had a chance to go 2-for-1 and didn't get it. You know, they basically just dawdled on both occasions for no reason, and that ended up hurting them. I mean, they ended up getting a chance to just throw kind of, you know, tough alley-oops. That actually had a decent chance if there had been a good pass on both of them. They were able to use Steph as a back, you know, his shooting ability basically as a back screen, or at least, you know, to have him get a screen and then have the guy slip it. But, you know, they couldn't get a good enough pass on those plays. But I was really surprised at that. I mean, they had three timeouts left. That's one of the few times that I actually do advocate getting a timeout there, is to make sure you get the two-for-one, just because the math is so good. And we're not talking about one of these two-for-ones where it's like, all right, we got 5 seconds. Like, they had like 15 seconds where they could have gotten a totally good shot within that time
frame. That's my biggest pet peeve, is the two-for-one thing. I always prefer teams to go for the two-for-one. And look, it doesn't really matter if it's the first or second quarter. And, you know, whatever, you want it, you don't bother to get it. Like, maybe it's not mathematically the biggest thing, but that's not a huge deal. But when you're talking about, you know, I think it was with, I'm going to check right now. I think in the fourth quarter it was with 40. Yeah, they got the ball.
Yeah, they were both with like 40
yeah,
seconds.
Yeah, they got left. The ball with 40 seconds left in regulation, and they got the ball with 42 seconds left in overtime, the first overtime. And, you know, I agree with you about calling timeout, but frankly, that's on Steph. To me, if you're Steph Curry, like, you know how much time's on the shot clock. You can see the game clock right there. It's not like Steph's not capable of coming down and putting up a three. So, like, you should be able to see that and go, all right, let's run a high pick and roll and get a shot up or something. But yeah, it was kind of bizarre to see them just dawdle along and chuck up a shot and not.
Yeah, and the game is tied at that point too. Like, if you're up, yeah, you try to waste as much time as you can, and they did that in the second overtime. But when you're tied,
right,
yeah, you got to get the
you got to get the two for one, just to give yourself two cracks at it. And both times it could have cost them, really. I totally agreed on that. I was kind of shaking my head through both of those possessions, just waiting to see if it would come back to haunt them.
And then my other coaching thing, I did think Stevens did well. I thought he did a nice job even rotating guys in and out during the overtimes to try to keep them fresh, which I think not enough coaches do, although not a lot of coaches have the depth that Stevens has at his disposal either. But what killed me was the quick two.
You're very against the quick two. You're very against it.
Well, all right. This is the thing. Like, and I was talking about this with Bob Bulgaris a little bit on Twitter last night. I agree there are sometimes, maybe, when the quick two is defensible. Number one is when you have a guy just standing there wide open under the basket, right? And that wasn't this for Crowder. He drove in and he shot, you know, maybe you could say that's like a 60%.
Sean Livingston was playing some amazing defense on that play.
Yeah.
I don't know how Crowder made it.
Yeah, I saw you tweeted that at the time.
Yeah, I don't know how Crowder made it.
Yeah, so that was a really tough shot. And you don't know when you drive in whether you're really going to blow past him and get an easy shot or not, but then you're kind of pot committed at that point to shoot that shot. That's why I like, you know, running a play where you're screening for a guy to maybe get a three, and then the big can slip that and go for the quick two and get a wide open dunk and pass it to him. That's a little bit more defensible. So that's number one. But then the worst part of it was they called timeout to set that play up. No effort whatsoever was made to deny Steph Curry the ball in bounds.
Right.
And then there was no effort made to, like, trap or force a turnover at all. If you're going for the quick two, you allow the ball in bounds to Steph Curry with no effort to deny him. You're basically just trading the two,
and
just wasting time and wasting timeouts. And that's what they did. Curry hit a couple free throws, and then they came back and they did get a great shot at a tying three,
right.
You know, the Warriors kind of messed up a little bit on a switch on that play for Crowder, and you know that's a shot that they'll take any time. But the Warriors really could have fouled then, especially with the Celtics out of timeout. Green tried to foul, and that's kind of how Crowder got open, because Green went off his man to go for the foul. Steph had to help on the back cut, or maybe didn't have to help, but instinctively did, and that's how Crowder was open, because that's who Steph was guarding, and he just missed it. The Warriors definitely dodged some bullets in wide open shots
by
the Celtics in this game.
They definitely did. I have less. I don't mind Stevens drawing up that play.
You're talking about for the quick two?
I agree with what you're saying about the quick two in general. I thought it was a nice play. I mean, if if Sean Livingston is playing unbelievable defense on that play, I think 9 times out of 10, that is a very easy layup. So I get what you're saying. I didn't mind that as much. And I also don't mind fouling Curry right away when he gets the ball, because I'd rather not waste time with no timeouts in that spot. I'd rather get the
ball. Well, they still had one left at that.
Oh, that's right. But, they called it later.
Yeah.
Okay.
But they called it to set up the Crowder
that's
three
right,
afterwards.
That's right.
Yeah.
But even still, I don't mind not wasting time there, because I'd rather have the time on the clock. But to your point, the maddening part of that was not even, like, everyone just standing there with a ball out of bounds. It's just like, all right, if you're going to go for the quick two, then expect that. And when the ball goes in, everybody run to Steph Curry. And if you have to triple team him, fine. Make somebody else catch the ball. And just foul
him. I agree with you.
So that was the part that really got me. It was like, if Curry catches it, fine, foul him, because I don't want to waste 4 or 5 seconds.
Yeah, by that point, you're screwed. But, I mean, you've already – the quick two, I will have to agree to disagree on that one. But then, I mean, you know, yeah, go for the quick two, but you damn well better have some kind of a plan to keep it out of Curry's hands, because you're clearly just trading at that. I mean, I'll tell you this, Steph Curry's chances of hitting 2 free throws is a lot better than Jay Crowder's chance of making that layup.
No, I agree. And I'm not saying I advocate for quick twos really in general. I'm just saying I didn't necessarily mind that play there. But I just had a way bigger issue with them not being ready to defend the inbounds pass. Like you said, like, if you're going to set that play up, you have to set it up with the expectation that, all right, we're going to hammer everybody on the inbounds, and we're going to make sure Steph doesn't get the ball and get somebody else to the foul line. And hope our crowd can get a miss. But, you know, that's obviously not the way that's obviously not the way that they handled it.
Yeah, and overall, I mean, granted, they had to do a little bit of fouling late, but I think it was 31 out of 39 for the Warriors at the free throw line. And usually the Warriors are not a high foul team. Boston was very aggressive, obviously, and Bradley ended up fouling out partially due to that aggression, and they defended really well because of that aggression. But if they could have just kept the Warriors off the line a few less easy points, especially down the stretch in the fourth when they took that 5-point lead, I was like, wow, they are really struggling to score. And the Warriors had a few times where they were able to get fouls on plays where it wasn't really, you know, some awesome shooting foul where we have to foul the guy. It was just kind of, you know, little cheap plays away from the ball, or, you know, Evan Turner like trips Steph as he tries to drive by him, and they're called for a foul on the ground, like that kind of stuff. So that was regrettable for Boston.
Yes, totally agree on that. Totally agree.
So anything else that stuck out to you just from like kind of a performance or an X's and O's? I still want to talk obviously just a little bit more about kind of the zeitgeist in the arena.
Sure,
and all that kind
of thing. Yeah, I mean, I thought Avery Bradley was awesome. I mean, if you look at, you know, his stat line isn't great, and he didn't really, I think he went like 2 for 12, I think, after the first quarter. He had a couple shots in the fourth. But he was big for them in the first quarter. I think he went 6 for 7, hit 3 for 3 from three, and got the crowd going and got them out in front, and kind of prevented Golden State from opening up a big cushion early, which I think was important for the Celtics to keep the crowd in the game. And defensively, you know, we talked a little bit about it before, but I really thought he was awesome because, you know, like you said, you know, Steph is so quick. You know, people don't – I don't think you realize how quick he is, Steph Curry, unless you see him in person and you see how the screens for him and they get him moving around.
Yeah. And not only that, his stamina is unbelievable.
He's like Ray Allen, like to the point where like Ray Allen could just run around for 48 minutes and never stop. And Steph is the same way. But, like, you know, when they're running Draymond as the point guard and, you know, they have Steph running off screens left and right and running all over the place and, you know, going through Bogut every possession. Like, you know, Avery Bradley's running through all these guys.
Yeah,
and
I lost count of how many, like, you know, DHOs he was successfully able to deny, or just time Steph would pop off a screen and Bradley would be right there. I mean, I thought he and KCP are the two did the best on
– yes.
Curry so far this year, and KCP kind of did it by kind of being right there when Curry caught the ball, and Bradley even did it more by not even letting him get it, and then really getting into him and bothering his dribble, I mean, into a lot of those 8 turnovers. And, you know, you could see that Steph was tired. I mean, just mentally tired as well, which you don't see as much, where he threw a couple of lazy passes. Like,
yep.
He tried to just kind of lob it over a trap one time to Turner where they were up by 3 in the second overtime and ended up, like, giving up a fast break layup. So, yeah, I mean, they did a great job tiring him out, and they also did a great job attacking him on defense with Bradley, especially early on.
Yep, and you could see, you know, to that point about them looking tired, you could really see the Warriors feeling the effects of this road trip. Like, you know, anybody who's covered a beat and has been around a team, when you're on a 2-week road trip and you're at game 6 and 7, and if you get that far, 8 of a 2-week road trip, everybody's just burnt out. You know, the Warriors had a little bit of a benefit because they had a couple days between their last game and this one. But when you're on the road for 2 weeks and you're going from place to place and you're moving around and you're playing all these games, you know, and for these guys, you know, they're down Harrison Barnes. Tonight they're down Harrison Barnes and Klay Thompson. You could see that they just didn't have the same kind of zip as a group. You know, and Steph especially, like, just didn't look comfortable, didn't look the same as he normally does. And, you know, I do kind of wonder about them tomorrow. You know, they go to Milwaukee tomorrow. Milwaukee's been pretty terrible. I would be really surprised if the Warriors don't win that game, just like every other game. But,
yeah, I mean, I'd be surprised if Thompson plays, though, too.
Well, you know? I wouldn't say that. It kind of seemed after the game like people were kind of thinking he would play. So.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to, you know, guarantee anything, but just kind of the way the feeling in the locker room was kind of like, all right, yeah, hopefully we'll have to play back tomorrow and you get another body back. And, you know, he was walking around. He looked okay after the game. So I wouldn't be, especially because they've had 3 days off and it seemed like he probably could have played today if it really mattered.
Yeah, well, that was interesting, you know, because I was saying to Danny last night, I feel like it does really matter. I think, like, you know, this is, to me, and it's funny, like, our viewing in American sports, you know, when you compare it maybe to, like, Europe, where you kind of have all these separate competitions
yes.
that your team is in, and it's not, you know, there are a bunch of different things that you can win. There's not one best team every year. This idea that, like, if they were to set the record and then wouldn't win the championship, that somehow completely devalues the accomplishment, you know, that's a very kind of American way of thinking, and you know, that's true, and I think ultimately, if you're a player, you know, it's you're like anyone else, you're kind of just, you know, evaluated in a lot of ways on what society thinks of you and how good you are and, you know, whether you're in the record books for a championship and all that stuff. But I don't know. I mean, I think I don't know how ready he was. I would tend to think, and, you know, they are very smart. They're probably have their eye on the long term much more than I would. But I think this would just be so cool. And also, just that he's the type of player who can help you even when he's out there at less than 100% just due to being able to stand in the corner and shoot. So I don't know. I mean, I think I'm not saying like they made the wrong decision to not play him or something like that. I have no idea what his status was. But I would have skewed more towards, all right, we're going to play him. I mean, it's just an ankle too. You know, I mean, you can always get him back to full health later, as Danny was saying yesterday.
Yeah, I guess I would say that it's a tough line to walk because you don't want to have something happens where, you know, like I think Harrison Barnes is already out a couple weeks and it seems like he's going to miss a while. And
yeah,
I don't think you want to be in a situation where Klay might miss a few weeks if he's not quite right. But I'm with you. Like this is a, you know, I just started off by saying this is a huge event. And, you know, it would be a shame if, you know, like there's talk that, oh, well, you know, I've seen some people say stuff like they're not going to risk the streak or they're not going to overvalue the streak at the expense of health. But, you know, I do think it matters and it would, you know, like I think I saw somebody, might have been David Thorpe, tweet that, you know, maybe they shouldn't play Draymond and or Steph tomorrow because they played 48 and 50 minutes today. And I just think that would be, you know, if they did something like that, I mean, whatever, that's fine. But I just think it would really be disappointing if they didn't at least give it their best effort.
Yeah. I don't know how well the Bucks can really do against them, especially if Klay is back, because they just don't have the level of defensive discipline that it's going to take to not leave step, to not lose guys. I think the way they scramble all over the place is going to really leave some openings. And whereas this Boston team, I mean, did so well, just not, I mean, there was a time other than on a fast break, I just couldn't remember at one point in the fourth quarter in the overtime, like when the last good shot the Warriors got, like actually was. And that was why it was such a remarkable defensive performance from them. How long do you think this streak lasts? You want to make a prediction here, which will be wrong, as certainly mine was. I think I had Utah as being the end of it. So
I don't know.
I mean, and it's tough because I mean, after this Boston game, I thought Boston. I mean, I think even once the Clay news came out, like the Warriors were favored by like 5 points or something. I thought that was ridiculous. I thought that Boston really it was a 50-50 toss up to me at that point, and I thought the game kind of bore that out by the way it went. But so, yeah, I mean, it's tough because you're not predicting an event that has a greater than 50% chance of happening for really any game on their schedule until maybe they play at the Spurs or at the Cavs. But I don't know. What's your gut feeling?
It feels like if this is going to happen, it's going to be Christmas Day. And it just like, I mean, I think they're probably going to lose some random game that we don't expect. And, you know, like they almost lost the Nets game. Like, it'll be some game like that. Like, that's why I said maybe tomorrow. Like, some random game when they're tired and, you know, they just can't hit a shot and they just lose. But barring that happening, yeah, Christmas Day game feels like the kind of opportunity for, you know, LeBron to have a LeBron game and just kind of, you know, will the Cavaliers to a win. Because, you know, that's the kind of game you could kind of see him saving up for and really letting loose, especially given what happened last June and, you know, that being a national stage and everything else. But yeah, I mean, like you said, there's only a couple games they're not going to be favored in the rest of the season. So, you know, to try to pick out a game where they're going to lose is tough because they're, you know, if they're right, most of the time they're going to win.
You know, it's I think that it's going to be very interesting to see what the atmosphere is like at Oracle once they return, and now that it's really the hype has gotten out of control. I mean, especially that first game back from a road trip is something that NBA teams, you know, are kind of legendary as being a real tough game for teams some of the time. And so to see whether, you know, what the crowd is going to be like, are they going to sort of be almost, you know, anxious or something like that. I mean, they've almost played better, the Warriors have, on the road during this streak than they have at home at times, especially Steph. So that'll be interesting to see. But, yeah, I don't know. January 4th at Charlotte would be when they would break the record. That would be the 34th game. That would make them 34-0 if they can make it until then. And, that's starting to come into view now. That's not that far away. And, I mean, that'll be a hard game the way Charlotte's playing. But that'll be at home. They have a fair amount of home games coming up. Really, other than that Cleveland game, no huge powers that they have to play. They have to play at Houston. I'm sure Houston will, you know, has some effort problems, but they'll be up for that game. But no other games really pop out to me as being ones that are like, all right, you know, they could lose the way this Celtics one was. I mean, I think this Celtics game, especially with Thompson out, is probably the game that they were most likely to lose between now and January 4th. And they have successfully navigated that like they have all the other ones.
Yeah, you're probably right. I mean, that first game back from the road trip is against Phoenix. That could maybe be tricky, though Phoenix has been a mess. You know, if Gobert was healthy still, maybe the Jazz would give them more of a trouble on the 23rd. I think the Cleveland game could maybe be tough. The Dallas-Houston back-to-back on the road could be kind of tough. But, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's – they're the best. They're the best team in the league by a long shot. So at this point, so yeah, it's hard to look at it and say, well, they're going to lose this game or they're going to lose that game. So it's it's a remarkable run, and the fact that we're even contemplating that they could win 34 or 35 games in a row to start the season is just mind blowing.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, one way to look at it is, them setting the record is twice as likely, but no, probably more than twice as likely. I'm not exactly Mr. Math, but, you know, they've already won double the number of games that they need to win here. So it's going to be awesome. Clear your January 4th already if you're if you have plans that day, cancel them in advance. So any other thoughts on just kind of what the atmosphere was there? I mean, was it really like, you know, some people said like it was a bigger deal than like the 2010 finals there. I mean, are you willing to go that far?
I mean, I wasn't there for the 2010 finals, but that was that was as raucous as any place I've ever been in. I mean, the anticipation for it was big too. Like there were people like crowded around the hallway when Curry ran out on the court and ran back off for his warm-ups, just screaming at him like we're at a Justin Bieber concert, like just going berserk. Like it's real. They've really become this traveling circus, and it's really just, you know, like I was thinking about it, and you know, that first Heat team, that first year with LeBron, was like this.
But in a negative way,
but it was still this, you know, this thing you had to see. You had to see the LeBron Heat, and I don't have the perspective to be like, were the Lakers like this back in the early 2000s with Shaq and Kobe, but I really don't think, other than the Heat, there's been anything like this since Jordan's heyday with the Bulls, where there's just this team that just everywhere they go, you just have people who are like they're just dying to see them play. And like, I can't get over the Stephen Curry warm-up thing. Like it boggles my mind that there are hundreds of people that will come to a game 2 hours early just to watch this guy shoot some jumpers. Like, I mean, he does some fancy stuff in it, but it's not like he's doing anything that hasn't been done before in a basketball court. And, you know, it's just like people have to get a glimpse of the guy. And it's really wild. I was talking to, speaking, you mentioned Ethan Strauss before, I was talking to him and a couple guys on the way out of the arena. And I mean, I think a reason why this is happening is, this is so unexpected just in general. Like,
yeah. And it's gone to another level even since they started this road trip, right? Like, I mean, he had heroics in Utah. He had that 28-point third quarter against the Hornets. That was just probably maybe even like his most ridiculous quarter ever with where he was pulling up. Like, it's just every time now you get the feeling that, all right, we just have to see this guy. He's going to go crazy. And you know, this kind of tour where he's been going through the whole nation, the attention, and then with the streak as well, has really gone to like another level just even over the past 2 weeks.
Yeah, and even if you go back to last year, right? Like, I mean, yeah, Ethan picked them to win the championship, but and it wasn't completely insane that they won the championship last year, but no one really expected that. And it's pretty rare to find an NBA champion that no one expected. I mean, the NBA is usually a sport where at the beginning of the season, if you pick five teams, say one of these five teams is going to win a championship, 95% of the time or more, one of those five teams is going to win a championship. And the fact that the Warriors had such an unbelievable historic season last year and have followed it up the way they have this year, I really think it's kind of become this, you know, people are just kind of in awe of this thing that it's become. And you know, now you add the streak on top of it, you add Stephen Curry, who's this guy that looks like a random person walking down the street, who's the best player on the planet now, and it's just become this kind of phenomenon that just has transcended everything. I mean, we're in the middle of the NFL season, the college football playoffs just got announced, and all anybody is talking about is the Warriors. And you know, and there's never been a team in December other than that Heat team that I can remember that ever had this kind of attention in December that the Warriors have. And it's great for the NBA, and it's just fun to be around because they're a fun group and they play a fun brand of basketball, and it's neat to see them doing something that no one's ever done.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's a good way to wrap it up. I think, definitely read Tim's piece about this last game, and obviously you're the newly minted national reporter for the Washington Post, so you're going to be, and you have a podcast as well, right?
Yes, I have the Posting Up podcast, which you can subscribe to on iTunes as of yesterday.
Everybody has a better podcast name than me. I wish I had thought about it harder, but at some cost now, right?
Yours has your name in it, though, so that's better than mine.
But the, no one knows how to spell it, I think, is the problem. So, like, if people are Googling it, it's, like, hard to find. Like, the apostrophe, like, it sounds good. It doesn't look good in writing. I think maybe that's the problem.
Right. I still think it's impressive you got your name into it. But yeah, I got the Posting Up podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes. And, yeah, I'm at the Washington Post. You can read my stuff there.
All right, man. Thanks so much for coming on. You can follow Tim on Twitter at Tim Bontemps. That's right, isn't it?
That's right. You got it.
Yeah, and I'm Nate Duncan, MBA. Thanks so much for listening, and we will be back, Danny and I, with our normal episode Sunday night. Thanks for listening to this special edition. We'll talk to you all next time.